Kentucky. I mean, they were mm-hmm. a couple of road, finding a way to win a road game here mm-hmm. or there last year away from making the NCAA tournament. I think right now that I think you saw tonight that's, and I said, I think it's got a lot more to do with what Tennessee did tonight than what they didn't. I thought Tennessee was fantastic tonight.
Back to the phones we go. 865-200-5402. Tennessee victorious this evening. Keith, Willie Carmichael in the game. This has to be a misprint, okay? The kid only had 3 personal fouls.
And one of them was not a bad foul.
No. One of them was a necessary foul.
Yeah, I mean, he stepped in and tried to take a charge on Michael Qualls to keep him from getting a dunk. And
necessary
and
foul.
And he got there late. It was the right call. It was a block. But, I mean, he didn't commit those ridiculous karate chop a guy in the throat under the basket with the ball on the other side of the floor nonsense tonight. I mean, he got 3 fouls. And, I mean, post players are going to accumulate some fouls, especially playing against other pretty good post players.
Keith, he was
much better tonight than he has been.
Keith, you can call me crazy. I'm convinced Jabari McGee is going to be a real nice player here. I think Tariq Owens is going to be a real nice player here. I think Getcher Mostel is going to be a star here. I think Carmichael, before it's all said and done, will be a nice player. I think Kevin Ponder will be a very good player next year. I think Bachman's going to be a nice player. I think Hubs is starting to come into his own. And if you look at the rest of Tennessee's lineup, they've got some guys. I mean, he's got some pieces here. They're not at all going to be awful going forward without Richardson.
I think we'll look back in a couple of years and realize that he did a fantastic job with his first recruiting class. We've talked about it, and you know I completely agree with you. I think all 3 of the freshman big men will be contributing quality SEC caliber players. And I mean, you see flashes out of Dietrich Mostella, and it doesn't take someone with the trained eye of a Maury Hanks to see that Dietrich Mostella's got some talent. Now he's got to learn to play. I mean, he still does some things that would just drive you absolutely insane, and things that you wonder if he's ever actually played organized basketball before. But no, there's no doubt he can play. And I mean, and Punter's one of these guys. He would be the perfect 7th man on a really good team.
Yes, he would. Just attitude.
Well, yeah,
glue guy.
He didn't have to play point guard. I mean, he's not a point guard.
No, he's not. No, he's not.
Well, he can't dribble left-handed. He can't dribble it off his left hand.
Right. Just one minor technicality.
That's kind of an impediment to playing point guard if you can't dribble. If one of your hands is completely useless as far as dribbling the ball. But
here's a number for you that our friends at Basketball Time in Tennessee have come up with. Tennessee went 22 months without a win over a ranked team before beating number 15 Butler last month and now number 19 Arkansas tonight.
Yeah, I was about to say, even during the nice little run they had to get to the tournament last year, during the regular season and into the tournament, I don't think anybody we played would have been ranked because certainly nobody in the SEC that we beat was. And then you get to the NCAA tournament wins. Yeah. Iowa had been in free fall. Mercer and UMA, I mean, that doesn't surprise me.
Let's go to our phones, get our next call. Hello and welcome. You're on your smart way. Dalton Behring and Hydraulic, Tennessee Basketball Overtime.
Bossman Hatfield, BOB from the Mid-State. How are we doing this
evening? Hey, great to hear from you, BOB.
Doing fantastic.
You know, it occurred to me, guys, while I was on hold, that Tennessee now has more wins in basketball, 2 games into the conference schedule, than we do players who contribute meaningful minutes.
What does that mean?
We've got 10 wins. We've got 9 guys who actually see the court.
I see what you're saying.
Impressive.
Yeah, it's a pretty damn good coaching job, and I'll tell you what. These kids have really played hard. It's hard to not have somebody spell you to play as hard as he's asking them to play at both ends of the floor. That cannot be easy. Armani Moore said that he had, if you heard him, in both calves tonight. Not one, but both calves he was cramping up.
There were 2 or 3 things that really impressed me overall tonight, and the one thing that's kind of a trend that makes sense while that game got close at the end. One thing that impressed me is Donnie Tindall's timing when it comes to using timeouts and how judiciously he uses them. You'll notice we had plenty of timeouts in our pocket getting ready going to halftime, and we were bringing the ball up in the backcourt and kind of got in a situation where we got really close to the sideline and kind of made an overhead pass that he wasn't real happy with. He immediately called timeout, calmed his guys down, and reminded them of the game plan and how they were going to break that press tonight. Just little things like that I'm starting to pick up on with his coaching. It's pretty impressive. That's one thing. Number two is this. As bad as the call was at the end of the game on the shot versus no shot on the three-pointer, you guys realize we were not in foul trouble at that point of the game. We're playing nine guys against an Arkansas team that plays 94 feet, and so do we. And we had a foul to give in that scenario, and I think that's one thing that's kind of been overlooked.
Oh, and we were in a position. I don't know that they shot a free throw in the bonus in the first half. I think they got into the bonus, but I don't think they ever shot a free throw in the bonus in the first half. I mean, Tennessee, after giving up way too many foul shots too often this year, kept a team that, given their personnel and the advantages they had against Tennessee, probably should have gotten to the foul line a whole bunch, and they kept them off the line tonight. I thought that was a huge key to the game.
But, B.O.B., your point is, at the end of the game, they were not going to let him shoot that three-pointer.
Absolutely not. Matter of fact,
I love that.
I was shocked they didn't foul him in the backcourt.
That's what they were trying to do, I think.
I think they were trying to, B.O.B. They just didn't get to him in time.
Yeah, this team here is full of rockheads. I don't know if you've noticed that. I mean, they play hard. God bless them. But they are full of rockheads. And they're not the, you know, they're not the greatest basketball IQ team you see. I mean, they're going to do things like this that drive you nuts. I love the attempt and the intent, as you're saying. For too long, we've had coaches that sit around here passively and let people shoot three-pointers to tie games. I guarantee you if Buzz Peterson was here, he would have let one of those guys sit out there and gun a three-ball in, and we'd be gone to overtime. We'd have lost that game in overtime.
We'd have fouled the guy. He'd have made the shot, and we'd have fouled him.
Okay. But B.O.B.'s point is well taken.
Oh, yeah.
Now, from a trend standpoint, and this is just my theory on this, and you know, shoot holes in it if you want to, you know, Tennessee is obviously much more competitive. We've got a better chance of winning by keeping the score in the 60s, Keith, as you mentioned. And this was an Arkansas team that likes to get up into the 80s and score a lot. Even though, Tony, I agree there were some jump baskets at the end, some three balls that were just, you don't know where they came from. You notice the closer we got into the mid-70s, that's when Arkansas made the game close. The higher the score got, the better chance they had to win. Fortunately, that clock ran out for us. And fortunately, that kid missed those free throws at the end. Because if that game goes to overtime, guys, we're dead in the water, I think.
Oh, you ain't winning that game in overtime. There's no way.
The only way we win the game in overtime, the only thing that would have saved us in overtime is all of their guys had four fouls. Would have been the only thing that would have saved us.
Okay, guys, here's my next question. How do we create an opportunity for Teddy Valentine to find another line of work? I mean, what is it that we could find for him to do that will satisfy his ego, get him enough attention on the television and enough attention in arena, where we could escort him out of the SEC and maybe on to something bigger and better?
I don't know what you could do with Teddy Valentine, because you have to have something that gives you national exposure. He's really into that. Tonight, I like what Keith said, Keith's point about him. Not only does he make that call, and he was going to make the call anyway, but he called that other official over there just to give himself a few more seconds of television exposure. And I really do believe that he goes back, and the guy has wood. I mean, he's literally watching himself, B.O.B., in a very excitable, shall we say, manner. Hey, look at me. I'm on TV, honey. Look at me.
You think he's got the Chris Matthews thing with a little tingle running up?
There is no question. He's got the tingle and the dinkle.
You know what the funny thing about him is? Among guys who call most of their games in Big Five, Big Six conference games, he calls the fewest fouls of anybody in the country.
Boy, the Keith, when he does, they're big fouls, though, aren't they?
Well, he does that. He loves to do stuff like issue bench warnings.
Yeah, he did that tonight. He issued a bench warning tonight.
Some esoteric rule that nobody's called in 50 years, He loves to come running in and pull something out of that, like that, because he knows that the announcers are going to have to go to the rule book or do something and talk about, oh, well, we rarely see that. He's really on top of it.
Maybe he has a future in the NFL. Maybe that'd be a good spot for him. Get to turn on the microphone, explain the play, why they called it the way they called it, why they overruled the call.
Well, the NFL, yeah, but the NFL wouldn't put up with Teddy because he'd take 5 minutes to call a holding.
B.O.B., thanks, man. Great talking to you.
Yeah, it would be like one of those Bill Maher monologues for a holding call.
Vol Colonels points out that we have exactly the same record we had at this point last year, but boy, this season feels a whole lot different than that one from the standpoint of, and he points it out, you've got 3 resume wins already.
Well, and you don't feel like you've left anything on the table this year.
Yep.
I mean, last year, you just looked at that team and you looked at the personnel and you thought, especially in a really down SEC, looked at that team and you thought this team should be better than this.
T. Goodfrey on Twitter says, do you not think this is the first crew, Keith, that actually let us play basketball without the whistles? Now, that is true.
Oh, no, Teddy doesn't. Tony Green and that other guy, that's a crew. When they came out, I said, there's not going to be a lot of foul calls in that.
Yep,
there's going to be some bizarre stuff. Like I said, a bench warning out of nowhere that essentially kind of stunted Tennessee's momentum for a minute. And that's something that really has begun. And Ted's not the only one I see do that. There are a couple other guys in the country that are just notorious for it. Why are you warning kids about being excited about playing? I would think that's exactly what you want. I mean, I don't want to come to the arena and watch a bunch of kids acting like they're taking a chemistry test.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't realize that college basketball had become this solemn, monk-like pursuit. I mean, God forbid the kids actually enjoy what they're doing.
865-200-5402. Back to our phones we go. Smart Way, Dalton Bering and Hydraulics, Tennessee, basketball, overtime. Let's go back to our phones. And I absolutely love TV. The thing I love about Teddy, when he makes that call, he pumps that bicep out there like I used to. I used to have a friend that goes, he used to say, quit making a muscle. I was 15, 14, 15. He'd go, I go, what are you talking about, man? I'm sitting there flexing my arms, you know. He goes, stop that. Quit that. You're flexing your arms. I go, no, I'm not. My biceps are naturally that big. And my dad would look at me and go, you have a sparrow's leg, Tony. What are you talking about?
You know what Teddy would be good as?
Yes.
Teddy would be a perfect heel referee for like the main event at WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah.
Teddy would be perfect.
That's not a bad idea.
John Cena and Seth Rollins at WrestleMania.
Let's go back to the phones. Don't give McMahon any ideas. By the way, I'm extremely proud of Todd Bowles tonight, my Temple boy. He is your new head coach of your New York Jesters. Todd Bowles has risen from the ashes of Temple football to become an NFL head coach. Wow. You talk about wow. And Bruce Arians was his coach in college. Todd Bowles' coach in college was Bruce Arians. Let's go back to the phones. Probably a little more information than you needed to know, but I'm one of the 5 people that enjoys Temple football and basketball. And to the phones we go. Hello and welcome.
Hey, my two brothers, Brian. What's going on?
Hey, Bry. Hey, good to hear from you, man.
Good stuff tonight, Tony. I told you there during the game that TV Teddy Valentine, brother. I knew that was coming. You don't forget he bounces on that one leg 3 times, and then he throws his hand out there. You can't forget the one-legged 3 bounce to push that ball the other direction, man. He's got to make that. Every time he does it, he bounces on one leg about 3 times.
Yeah, I love the bouncing on the 3 legs. That's another good Teddy Valentine deal. You got to get yourself a little extra time there, bouncing.
That's it, guys. Hey, let me ask you this. You know you already spoke on it, Keith. I had to step away for a little bit, but did you give Derek a little bit of props tonight? Did it come out of your mouth that Derek Reese
I think everybody did. I think everybody that played any significant minutes tonight contributed. No, I thought Reese.
I agree.
He didn't get shot happy. I mean, he had a couple of drives where he probably got the ball into traffic and turned it over. And at some point, you just have to realize some guys have flaws in their game, and they're going to do some things. But no, I thought tonight Derek Reese Derek Reese nor Monty Moore both, and I certainly, I mean, I'm always going to try to be fair on here. I absolutely killed both of them on here Saturday, and tonight they both came out and were absolute major contributors to Tennessee getting out of there with a win against the top 20 team tonight. There's no way to undersell what those two guys did tonight.
Well, rightfully so. Saturday, they deserve what they heard, and tonight I hope I can go ahead and tell you, I know Derek listens to him. I just got in talking to him there, and he was excited about some other stuff we'll talk about off the air. But, man, I want to also mention Bachman to be such a good shooter. If there is any negative tonight, wonder what's up there. He's, what was he, 0 for 4, 0 for 5? His shot seemed to be off the last couple of games.
And then the two free throws he missed at the end put Tennessee in real jeopardy.
Yeah, that's killer.
I mean, and of course, I look like a genius. I'm sitting there in the stands screaming for them to get him the ball because I wanted him shooting the free throws more than anybody other than maybe Josh. And then, of course, he goes up there and rocks both of them.
Yeah, well, 88% free throw shooter until tonight. But anyway, no, that's even still, you think, negative. What a great win. Appreciate the show as always. Always listening, guys, and have a great one tonight.
Thank you. Your point on Bachman's line. Bachman did have a real key steal and a tremendous pass as well that was key to Tennessee in the middle of one of their runs that helped stretch that lead out to about 15. But Bachman in 19 minutes tonight was 0 for 4 from the field. He was 0 for 2 from three-point land. Alarmingly, he was 1 for 4 from the foul line, including the sequence where he missed two consecutive that literally could have come back and helped cost Tennessee the game. He did have one rebound. He did have an assist. He only had one turnover, and he had one steal. So he didn't kill them, but it wasn't exactly a good effort by him.
No, it was not his best game. And Tennessee denied it. One thing they survived that probably may not have been apparent on the TV broadcast because they followed the ball so much. Tennessee had no fewer than three times tonight where Arkansas crashed into them on a rebound or something and the referees called a foul when Tennessee was about to have a run out. That happened no fewer than three times that Tennessee was about to be. Well, one was a steal where Armani Moore came down on Anton Beard. He slid up under him and they called the block, which they have to call that, but that was about to be a 2-on-none with Josh and Mostella. I mean, Tennessee had a couple of really bad breaks tonight that they were able to survive. I mean, there were probably 6 or 8 points that Tennessee was going to get on breakout layups that Arkansas just happened to. And it's not like if Arkansas was trying to wrap them up and get called for the fouls. It just happened that they fouled them at those points.
Back to the phones we go, 865-200-5402. Tennessee real fortunate to get out of there with a win tonight, in my mind. And in a lot of ways, Arkansas, with Tennessee 1 of 8 from the foul line, Arkansas fortunate that they were able to make it a game down the stretch because of Tennessee's failures at the foul line. In fact, Tennessee tonight, from the line, finishes 14 of 24 in their building. That just ain't going to get it done. I mean, you cannot shoot right around 60% in your building and beat people that can play. That's not going to happen. Let's go back to the phones and get another caller in here. Hello and welcome.
Hey, Keith, Tony. This is GQF.
Hey, buddy. How you doing, man?
Hey, guys, you think tonight's the night I should change my nickname, my calling name from GQF to BBF?
You going for Butterbean fan now?
That's what I'm thinking about doing there, Keith.
Hey, they were top. Hey, I can't imagine anybody thinking that he. I can't imagine anybody looking at him and not being impressed with what he's done with the person that with the limited personnel he's got so far.
Let's look at this nickname now. You know, I've taken George Quarles about as far as I can take him. I mean, he wins the damn state championship every year. And we've got these idiots like Phil Fulmer and Bush Jones that refuse to give him a job. So looks like he's stuck in a pigeonhole over there. And but I tell you what, I think the Butterbean, I think his ceiling is unlimited. What do you guys think? Hey, I told you before. I don't know if I told you, Keith, but I told Tony. all week, and I told Dubsy that I fully expected them to rebound and whip Arkansas tonight, which they did. You're not going to beat that guy down twice in a row. He's too good of a coach. And I heard an idiot get on Dubsy's show, and I'm talking a complete idiot. And he just dog cussed my boy Donnie Tindall, and talking about, oh, he didn't take enough timeouts last game, which he may not have taken enough timeouts last game. I didn't pay that close of attention. But he was talking about what a bad X's and O's coach this guy is. I think this guy's a better X's and O's coach. And don't get me wrong, I love Bruce Pearl. But I think he's a better X's and O's coach and a better recruiter than Bruce Pearl. What do you think?
From what I've seen so far, anybody who can watch what Tennessee's done with the limited personnel they've got and say Donnie Tindall's a poor X's and O's coach, I don't even know. I legitimately don't know how to respond to that.
They don't know anything about basketball, do they?
I can't see how. I don't see how somebody could watch this team with limited personnel, do what they've done, beat a number of good teams, generally be competitive in about every game. I mean, the game Saturday got away at the very end, but Tennessee's in the game for the vast majority of the game, even with that long drought scoring Saturday.
And they come out tonight and they shoot 50% from the field, 46% from three. You know, they look at the rebounds here. They're even on the rebounds against a much bigger team. It's just, I'll tell you what, I'm tantalized, and I'm so glad we've got this guy, and I wouldn't trade him for
anything. Did you call yourself tantalized just now?
He did.
Hey, Tony, I swear, and I mean this, I would not trade Donnie Tindall for any coach in the country right now. And I mean that. I don't care, Mike Krzyzewski, Rick Pitino, because all these guys are getting old. They're all up around 65. I would not trade Donnie Tindall for any coach in the country, including Bruce Pearl.
I'm going to ask that probably tomorrow or Thursday on the show, or maybe Friday, right in Bino's face. Thank you. Hope you have a great day there, Jeeker.
See you, Sheik.
Interesting. 865-200-5402. Go ahead. Miami's up 4 on Duke at Duke. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a bit lost as to how anybody can watch how this season's played out so far and question Donnie. I mean, sure, I mean, granted, if you want to not take into account the NCAA problems, yeah, his recruiting class this fall wasn't anything to go crazy about. I mean, I think he got two serviceable players, certainly not. I mean, once you lose Chris Clark, I think a lot of the shine comes off that. So if someone wants to question whether he can really recruit at this level, that's probably still a legitimate question. But as far as tactically, I don't know how you legitimately question his tacticianship.
Hey,
I don't know how you do that.
And Keith, I thought the guy, based on people I talked to, was a good coach. He's a lot better than I thought he was, Keith. A lot. And I thought he was pretty good.
He has gotten everything. Like I said, I'll put it this way, and this is, I think people who listen to me on your show and on the Friday show enough know this comment. This reminds me a lot of the first couple of teams Bob Huggins had at Cincinnati, Tony. I mean, this team is incredibly limited in numbers and in skill, but I mean, he puts them in a position tactically almost every night to have a chance to win. And I don't see.
Were those Nick Van Exel teams?
No, that was the stuff he inherited from Tony Yates.
Oh, okay. Yes, you're talking like 87, 88.
Yeah. Well, the first year would have been 89, 90.
Okay. Right in that period.
Yeah, I mean nothing but a bunch of guys who had been winning 7 or 8 games a year under Tony Yates, and they won 19, 20-ish range and made the NIT both years and then made the Final Four his third year. But I think there's no – you see that, and you see – you got to change a culture is the first thing you got to do because Donnie's doing it differently than Konzo did. Konzo, good, bad, indifferent, however you want to look at it. And I don't even concern myself with really what Konzo did here, other than Kendall approaches it very differently. It's a very different, I mean, it's a very in-your-face kind of program now, whereas it was under Konzo, it was a very understated group. And programs and teams take on the personality of their coaches. And I think that's what you see here. And that's, I'm sure to Josh Richardson and Armani Moore and Derek Reese, I mean, I'm sure it's a bit of a culture shock.
We're going to the phones, 865-200-5402. If you'd like to get in the hunt in the mix with us tonight. G-Man Vols wants to know, how many guaranteed likely wins do you see left on Tennessee's schedule?
I think it's easier, Tony, to look at the way this league sets up and figure out what the guaranteed losses are.
I agree, because there are...
And I think other than at home against Kentucky, and I could be wrong, Tone, the schedule kind of comes in and out where you play. We do go to Arkansas, right?
Correct, we do go to Arkansas.
I don't see any way Tennessee wins that game. I think LSU here is going to be really difficult because of their size.
Agreed.
But outside of those three, I don't think there's a game that Tennessee's a substantial underdog in. I don't think they'll win at South Carolina. I think South Carolina's pretty good. They've gotten off to a little bit of a rough start in league play, but I think South Carolina's pretty good. At Georgia will be tough because I think they're decent. At Vanderbilt will be tough just because at Vanderbilt's always tough for us. But I take it, other than Kentucky and at Arkansas, I don't think there's a game left on the schedule that I say they can't win.
Back to the phones we go, 865-200-5402. And then another individual here named Jared wants to know what Tennessee's chances are of making the field of 64. And I tweeted him back that it is way too early for that. I mean, you talk about something it's way too early for. It is way, way, way too early for that.
Well, I think the magic number now is 8, Tony. I think Tennessee, with their non-conference resume and what a mess I think the back end of the field is going to be, I think if they go 10-8 in the SEC, they've got a real chance. I think they'll be right there in it. I mean, that gets them to, what, 18 regular season wins? 18-13. Probably get a seed to where you can win your first-round SEC game. I think if they go 10-8 in the league, they're going to have a pretty good argument because I think they're going to be, like I said, there are going to be a bunch of teams out of, for example, the Big East and stuff sitting around at that 17-18 win mark. And Tennessee's going to have a win over Butler. Tennessee's going to have – Kansas State appears to be bouncing back now. I mean, they go into Norman and beat Oklahoma Saturday. I think that win's going to hold up. I think the Arkansas win will hold up beautifully. Because I think they're going to finish really strong, and they've already got a bunch of good wins. I think Tennessee's – like I said, 10-8, and with this team, hey, look, let's be honest about this team's personnel. If this team from here on out somehow only won 4 more conference games and finished 6-12, I mean, let's be honest, I wouldn't be stunned, but you, Tony?
No. Let's go back to the phones. 865-200-5402. The fairy haired boys of Duke losing tonight to Miami. 57-46, 11-41 to play in that basketball game. Jim Larranaga can flat out coach, and let's go back to the phones.
Yeah, Jim Larranaga is not bad, but Kentucky doing everything they can to help Tennessee out Saturday. Kentucky's up 41 now.
Where is Wade Houston when you need him? Let's go to our next call. Hello and welcome.
Hey, guys, it's MP.
Hey, MP.
Hey, what's up, MP?
Hey, give you a little stat here. For the last 10 seasons, Tennessee has had multiple wins over ranked teams 9 of the last 10 seasons, with last year being the only time that they didn't beat a ranked team. So I think that tells you all you need to know about the way the team was performing whenever the, pressure came from Mr. Martin. But I wonder if Seth Davis has tweeted the people at Southern Miss about the score in Knoxville tonight.
Seth Davis is a little brat. He needs, you talk about a guy who needs his little face slapped. He needs his face slapped.
Hey, guys, I got to disagree a little bit, and I don't claim to know basketball as good as as good as y'all, but to me, Portis looks like just a weakling. I don't know if maybe that had to do with us, but I mean, gosh, the guy's long and, you know, he finishes around the rim because he's so tall, but to me, he looked kind of weak. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of my thoughts on him. I was very underwhelmed by him last year, you know, and then I know he's leading the league in scoring, but I don't know. It looks like maybe he's a paper tiger, or am I totally wrong in missing the ball with him?
Now, see, I'm a big Bobby Portis guy. I thought we did a good job of making sure he didn't get the ball tonight where he could do much with it. There were a couple of long stretches in there where I don't think he got a shot.
And they didn't exactly feature him either, which really helped us. I'm surprised they didn't post him up some, try some things. They basically said, okay, Tennessee, you're going to stay perimeter-oriented. That's what we're going to do. We're going to bomb away here. And they really didn't try to feature him. And, Keith, I agree with Hatfield in that Portis still had 11 boards tonight. I mean, he still had a nice night. I wouldn't call him a weakling. I wouldn't call him a weakling in today's college basketball.
They kept throwing the ball to Jacory Williams.
Yeah.
In that high post and letting him take that shot. Granted, Tennessee probably, if you put Portis there, Tennessee probably adjusts to keep him from taking that shot because he's going to make it a lot more than Jacory Williams is. But I was a bit kind of thrown by the fact that I think they may have flashed him there one time in the first half when they were down in front of the end of the floor I sit on. And he immediately hit about a 12-foot jump shot.
You're right. And there was a couple times, though, that they got him the ball, and we closed it off, and he kind of kicked it back out. And he had a couple times where we blocked the shot. He just doesn't seem like the kind of guy to me that can turn and shoot a turnaround jump shot. It seems like it's either a layup or what. But I think a lot of that probably does have to do with the way we play. But that's not really fake Herman Cain's M.O. on the road, is it? I mean, he never – like, this Anderson guy, to me, totally is not what I thought he would be when he took that job. I mean, he's to be 4 years in and going to make the tournament this year but missed it before, I mean, that's underachieving at a school like Arkansas, isn't it?
Especially in today's college basketball, it's very much underachieving. Arkansas lost their way, though. They've lost their identity.
No, they got the tough break last year. I mean, if B.J. Young doesn't stupidly go pro, and he's there last year. I mean, they make the tournament last year. I mean, that hurt them.
Well, all in all, you know, through three games, can't be upset. We're 2-1 against the Bluzzes, so y'all have a good one. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
He worked in fake Herman Cain and the Bluzzes. I mean, you've got to really appreciate that.
No, Tony, I'm saying tonight at the game, if you told me this team was going to be 2-1 in the SEC through three games, I'd have been thrilled, and I don't care how you got there. I would have thought if they were 2-1, it certainly would have been winning at Mississippi State and winning Saturday.
865-200-5402 with a 6 o'clock start on the road Saturday night for Tennessee with Arkansas with Missouri, a terrible, and I mean terrible, Missouri basketball team. Tennessee had a chance to start 3-1. Now, granted. The three are Mississippi mistake with Missouri in there, but every win you steal on the road, it's like getting free candy. It's like getting something free.
Well, look at it this way. If you win Saturday night, Tony, if you can find a way to win at Missouri, you set yourself up then that we've talked all along about you win on the road to make up for home court losses. If you win Saturday, you're in a position where you've got the Mississippi State loss to balance the Alabama loss, and then you've got the Missouri win to balance what I think we all assume is a loss to Kentucky. So you're still on pace to go 500 in this league, which I think for this team, Tony, I understand. I don't like to sound like I'm trying to dumb down expectations and rain on people's parade. And certainly until you're out of it, you should think, oh, yeah, we can try to play our way into the NCAA tournament. But if this team plays 500 ball in the league and makes the NIT, man, I'll put it this way. I will be very, very comfortable with our head basketball coach.
I mean, John Reed, and he's, you know, and he's a kid, and good for John Reed. He said, have you come on board yet? Hey, John, I don't deal in overinflated expectations for my teams. I don't put over – you know, I'm an Eagles fan, right? Philadelphia Eagles. A lot of Eagle fans this year thought they were going to go to the Super Bowl with what? How the hell were they going to go to the Super Bowl? Even with a healthy Nick Foles, how are they going to do that? A lot of people in our fan base thought we were winning 8 football games in Butch Jones' second year. Why? Why? Why would you think that? And with this team here, a lot of people think this team is going to go to the NCAA tournament. Hey, great. And if it happens, I'll be there to celebrate it. But guess what? If it doesn't, I'm not going to be there and say you didn't get the job done. Just like I wasn't there at the end of Butch Jones' year and say he didn't get the job done. We have to be fair. We have to have a dead-level way of looking at this and being fair to all the individuals involved in it. Tennessee is getting everything out of their roster right now. And chances are they're going to get exhausted before it's over. They're going to hit a wall. Hey, they're going to have a couple more days like Saturday. And you got to hope it doesn't rattle them. And if it doesn't rattle them and they're able to navigate, maybe they can steal 8 more wins on this schedule. Because they've done enough. As you said, Keith, if they can get that thing to 10 wins, that'd be an insanely, insanely great accomplishment for these guys.
Oh, no doubt. And Tony, I think what we have to look at is the difference between expectations and hopes. I certainly hope this team makes the NCAA.
I hope it too. Yeah.
I mean, I think they've done a lot so far to put themselves in a position where they can at least discuss that right now. But expecting them to do it's a whole different ball game. Like I said, if this team, I said at the start of the year, if they finish ahead above 500 overall and make the NIT, there's a difference between in the abstract saying making the NIT is a successful season. That shouldn't, in the abstract, in the average year, that shouldn't be considered a good season at Tennessee, because Tennessee, with its resources, what is, I think, it's still a very underrated basketball tradition and its support and everything, Tennessee should be, we should make the NCAA tournament no less than 8 out of every 10 years. I mean, there are plenty of schools that do that, that put a lot less money, effort, resources into basketball than we do, that make the tournament 8 out of every 10 years. So I don't think that's too much to ask, but you've got to be honest in the given situation too. I mean, this is a team that was put together in a month, Tony. And there's four guys, and you've got four guys back who played together last year, and one of those guys was hurt 90% of the year in Robert Huff. So, I mean, you've got really three guys coming back who had ever played meaningful minutes in a Tennessee uniform. I understand wanting to make the NCAA tournament, but if at the end of the year anybody's complaining about them not making the tournament, it's like, and I'll be honest, and to be fair to Konzo Martin, Tony, I thought it was really unfair to Konzo Martin at the end of his first year when people
absolutely.
I thought that was completely unfair. I mean, the only reason
that team wasn't any good.
Konzo kind of hurt himself his first year with that great run at the end to get close, and then people got disappointed because that team had no business making the NCAA tournament.
Back to the phones we go. 865-200-5402. Go Temple! You retweeted my fight for the cherry and white tweet. I'm so proud of myself tonight. My Temple boys get one in the NFL. Yes!
They got a big one tomorrow night, Tony. If they get Will Cummings healthy, that game tomorrow night, I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of the year you look back and that might be the game that decides the AAC regular season championship tomorrow night against SMU.
Do you believe my Temple boys are heading to the NCAA tournament?
I think as long as Cummings is healthy and doesn't miss any significant time, I think, and certainly what the NCAA committee, the one thing they've proven they do a good job of is looking at teams that have personnel changes mid-season. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the guys they've added, Morgan and Bond and those guys, have been fantastic. And they're certainly a much different team now than they were in the middle of November. So I think so.
Back to the phones we go, 865-200-5402. Let's grab the next caller. Hello and welcome.
Tony?
Yes.
Hey, it's Magnum.
Hey, buddy, welcome.
Hey, that was great just to hang on to that one tonight. I mean, that was, I was fortunate that guy missing 3 free throws, but, that's a game we've seen Tennessee lose too many times, being ahead the whole game and then just coming down, you know, the last 10 years, it seems like that's happened too much. And, you know, they're just a pretty tough team. They seem pretty cool and calm. I mean, they didn't look like they were panicking too much. It looked like they were afraid to foul and, you know, left those guys open for those threes, but,
have you been tantalized? You sound like you've been tantalized tonight.
Oh, man, I've been liking him all along, man. I think they play pretty tough, and, you know, they are a surprise.
Apparently somebody from the Tennessee, or somebody from the paper down in Chattanooga has said that Donnie Tindall's punishment is only going to be 4 to 6 games, according to somebody, a tweet I just saw, and I can't figure out where that was posted. Ron Wright, send it to me again. I'll tell you what I think about stuff like that. Nobody knows. Okay? I mean, how in the hell do they know that? We haven't even gotten the letter yet. Nobody, how do you know that? I mean, based on what would you, why would you say that? Based on what? You could say Tennessee might think it might, there are people inside, like I've talked to people who think around that staff, they think it's not going to be as bad as it is going to look initially. It's going to look really bad initially when that letter gets here. And that's the other thing that might be a distraction, Keith, in all this when that letter arrives.
Oh, yeah. This is amazing, Tony. Kentucky just put salami from the White Shadow in the game.
Yes.
You know, you were...
What did Frank Haith do his last year there? Frank Haith must have been on the Derek Dooley plan. They have like two players who have any business playing in the SEC.
That's a sad thing, too, because they love their basketball at Missouri. They always have.
Yeah. Kim Anderson will get that thing fixed. Kim Anderson, everybody kind of made fun of that hire, that they didn't hire a big, sexy name or something. Kim Anderson will have them right back at the top of the SEC pretty quick.
You know, Keith, you were bringing up Bob Huggins there, but they started around 89 or 90. And, you know, Wade Houston started 89-90. And I was watching Arizona and Oregon State the other night, Gary Payton Jr. on there. And I remember Gary Payton coming in here mm-hmm. in 89-90 with Oregon State playing Allen Houston's freshman year. I mean, that was a heck of a ball game.
Oh, yeah. Tennessee played. I remember that was my freshman year in college. Tennessee played too great because they played Luke Longley in New Mexico, that non-conference game.
Right before that was the game.
Right together that were really, really good non-conference games.
Yeah, I got to thinking about that season, all the games in that place.
I mean, Chris Jackson. Oh, no, Tennessee. Yeah, Chris Jackson. That was no doubt. The one good season that Coach Wade Houston had was his first one.
Yeah. You know, they made the NIT. And, but, yeah, that Chris Jackson-Allen Houston game was phenomenal. And then, but the best game I've seen in Thompson Bowling was in the tournament that year when LSU
Georgia
played.
Tech and LSU.
Yeah.
LSU played the best basketball. I'm not sure I've ever seen a college team play better than LSU played in the first 10 minutes that night, and they still got beat.
Yeah, that was – but, you know, I mean, we used to see more guys come in there. You were talking about that yesterday, I think, Tony.
Mm-hmm. It's a different game now.
Guys,
it's a different game.
Come to college, and, you know, I never heard of Gary Payton, never watched Oregon State, but, right before that, you hear, man, this guy's awesome. We got, you know, so go see that game. And, I mean, he was a phenomenal player. And, you know, we were talking about it on Twitter there tonight about people leaving early. I remember that game, and it was tight,
mm-hmm.
late, and people leaving, you know, that crowd over there, that people were leaving early tonight, and it's still in doubt. And that just, it's just kind of weird.
People are always going to leave early. Thank you, Magnum. Go ahead, Hatfield.
I think part of that is with our fan base right now, we're so beaten down with what's going on in both major sports here in the last five or six years.
Yep.
That I think people get up and leave when we're up 5 with 3 minutes to go because they figure, hey, nothing but something bad can happen now.
So I watched the part of the game I saw. That's right.
I'm happy with what I've seen so far, so I'm just going to get the hell out of here now before something bad happens.
Yeah, you're playing blackjack, and you're used to busting, so you're just going to hold it 14. And the dealer goes, huh? Yeah, I hold it 14.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's legitimately where our fan base's head is right now. I think that's why you see a lot of people leave the football and basketball games early now when Tennessee's got a small lead late, is that they figure, hey, I'm happy with where it's at right now. I don't want to see it go bad, so I'm going to leave.
Boy, it almost went bad tonight. Miami is up 66-54, and they just got a turnover.
Oh, if that game had gotten away tonight, Tony.
Tonight's show would have been, oh my God, can you imagine?
Well, and imagine the tailspin you go into then.
By the way, I took your idea on Twitter and I raised it one because I love, and I mean love. I just tweeted this a second ago. It's probably politically incorrect. I'm sure a little dweeb like Seth Davis would think this is because he takes himself so seriously. He's so enlightened, by the way. I love, and I mean love, all capital letters, Keith, pale, ugly, Caucasian, college walk-on players in basketball, and I say Viva Shoes Hoffman to you, Keith. Viva Shoes Hoffman. And my own wife upstairs just favorited that tweet. I've achieved critical mass in my own household.
I think the thing that frustrates me most about Seth Davis,
yes,
he does that show where it's just he one-on-one with coaches on, I guess it's CBS Sportsnet.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. I mean, the guy, you're right, though. I've never understood guys.
He's a smarmy little brat.
Getting paid. I mean, why the hell can't he take a page out of Gary Parrish's book?
And just shut up and let people have their say. Right.
Well, Gary Parrish takes himself about as seriously as
mm-hmm.
I take myself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Goodman,
great at it.
DeCourcy.
Mm-hmm.
Seth Davis is the only person in any real position of, I don't know that power is the right word, but with a real platform mm-hmm. in that business. It's like he thinks he's Billy Packer.
He really
does.
He's
always got to have. He's got to have a cause. He's got to have something.
He really does. And Konzo is one of his causes. Konzo and the Tennessee fan base, even though Tennessee offered Konzo a contract, that can't be part of the narrative because it fits. It fits his worldview.
Oh, no,
it fits his worldview.
Oh, no, if you ask the slightly more than casual college basketball fan, the kind of guy who listens to Seth Davis and guys like that and knows who they are, they think Konzo got fired here. The vast majority of the nation, I guarantee, if you ask, like I said, you're slightly more than casual college basketball fan, they think Konzo Martin got fired here.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not remotely true, but that's what they think.
Duke is going to get their little 41-game winning streak. It is coming to a screeching halt, and I think I might just stay on the air till it happens. There's a steal.
Boy, that whole path to 1,000 doesn't seem to be going too well right now.
For the rat?
Yeah.
I like how those guys, Tack Air Spike calls him the rat.
Let's go. I don't want Tack Air Spike to tweet out that thing of him passing out again.
That's the worst thing I've ever seen that Tack Air Spike tweet. And you're laughing about it, encouraging Tack Air Spike to tweet that out. This is really devolving into something, Hatfield.
And honestly, Tony, you know how generally my opinions of people are pretty set. I used to be the world's biggest Mike Krzyzewski fan.
Until he turned into Seth Davis.
Essentially, yes. He lost me. When Hurley and Leitner and all those guys left, and he dove right in bed with the Myron Piggies of the world and those guys and became like everybody else that he'd railed against for years. He'd railed against guys leaving early and all this and all that. Then all of a sudden he saw the game changing and realized, well, I got to do that to make sure I keep winning my 30 games a year. So he essentially tosses all these principles and this high-minded stuff he had sold for 20 years and becomes just like everybody
yep.
else.
Now he's got That's a halfway house. He's got a halfway house now.
He's no better. I mean, I always love the guys who exalt him and act like he's some kind of cross between Christ and Gandhi.
I know, it's such a joke.
Well,
5.5 minutes, 71-60. Miami's going to have to hold on tight because they are.
They attack guys like Jim Calhoun and guys like
that's right. And they're no different. They're no different than Jim Calhoun. No different. You know what? Just like Joe Paterno. You know how different Joe Paterno was at the end of the day? Not at all.
No, not at all. You know what? I think those guys were legit early. I think Paterno was tried to be high minded and above it all early. I think Krzyzewski did too. But then they both hit a patch where they weren't winning the way they wanted to.
That's really interesting.
And they had two choices. You either stay your course and kind of fall into the middle of the pack and quit being the man.
Mm-hmm. Or Tom Osborne did the same thing. Couldn't get over the hump. Let's go get the Phillipses of the world and those guys.
Right. The Peter
Christian
brothers.
Peters,
no doubt.
You got it, Christian Peters.
1986, Tom Osborne never allows those guys on his campus. 1996, Tom Osborne couldn't get them on his campus fast enough.
Miami up 13, and I'm demented. Let's go back to our phones, 865-200-5402, if you want to get
I enjoyed home. That, Tony. I'm glad you brought up Tom Osborne. Any chance I get to smack him, I'm all for.
Maybe if we stay on here past the midnight hour, I'll let you get into BYU. Let you unpack those issues. That's a whole new kettle of fish. Let's go back to our phones tonight on your Smart Way Dalton Behring Tennessee basketball overtime and get our next caller. Hello and welcome.
Hey, Tony and Keith, it's JB.
Hey, JB.
Hey, JB, how you doing?
Really enjoy your work, Keith, by the way. Sister Mary Margaret texted me from Section 103. She agrees with what you said, just a little too colorful.
Okay, I can live with that.
By the way, on the Tony Basilio show, you make news. You don't report it. TR says our coach looks like Quinn Buckner. That's classic. And George Quarles, he's going to go BBF. Unbelievable. Now, that's buy-in, right? That's really buy-in.
That's buying in.
Yes. Guys, we knew it was going to be a long – when I look at this team, when I look at this and see what they've done, I look at it, I see the numbers, I watch the game, I still don't believe they're doing it to beat Kansas State and Butler and this team. I look at no McKnight, no Woodson, no McGee, no post presence, and no Childs, no Bonds, no point guard. And now when Bachman and Punter go 1-for-12, yet we have Hubs Life, we have Armani Moore coming on, we have reset some shots. It's almost a magic show. But this is going to be like a roller coaster. We're going to have really good days, and when they're bad, it's really going to be awful. So get ready for this. It's coming. And just the way it's going to be. But the fact is, this team's won 5 ball games, and they're at 49 in the RPI with these good wins. We're far better than we have been in the past. And if people understand what this guy is doing, I'm not a basketball guy. Even I can understand this, Keith. Do you think this guy is doing the best job in the country or in the top 5 job in the country with what he's got right now?
Oh, I think so. I mean, you've got some guys out there. I mean, the job Tony Bennett's doing at Virginia. I mean, West Virginia
with a job, yeah.
West Virginia right now, I mean, with a roster that I don't think anybody thinks is littered with NBA guys, is 15-2 playing in probably the deepest conference in the country. But no, Tony Tindall's doing nobody in the country. I'll put it this way, and I'll stand by this. There's nobody in the country doing a better job right now.
I agree.
I mean, that roster is incredibly limited.
When you look at this, we out-rebound Arkansas, and we have to go in like a swarm attack the boards. There'll be no Anthony Davis, you know, grabbing a ball and throwing a basketball pass for a layup. We're not going to get that. We out-rebound them. We turn them over more. Against Alabama, we seem to be lifeless. We have to disrupt and turn the ball over to create our offense. And we disrupted Arkansas for about a half and the most part of the second half. They came back and played strong. They were a very good bat. We'll look back. This will be a much bigger win than people understand right now. This is a big win. Keith, let me ask you a question. Am I crazy, or are Tyler Ulis and Devin Booker better than the Harrison twins at Kentucky? Am I missing something?
No, you're absolutely right. I think the mere fact that the novelty of them being twins, and they were huge recruits, I think Cal's trying to kind of play the recruiting game to where he doesn't want to go, he doesn't want to bench those guys and cut their minutes down to what they probably legitimately should be on that team, just because he doesn't want it used against him in recruiting. But
do you think the fact they're brothers, I actually, it hurts the game because they know each other so well, and they'll never make the connection with the other players. I think they hurt the team sometimes when they're out there.
Oh, I don't think that. I watch them on a fairly consistent basis. That there have been games that I'm not sure that they threw a pass to anybody other than each other.
And by the way, let me ask you, well, I've got you on the phone. I appreciate your opinion. At LSU, they've got Craig Victor come from Arizona. They got Ben Simmons. They got Antoine Blakeney and Jaquan Lyle to go with Martin and Mickey. They look like a real force next year.
If Johnny Jones would get out of the way and just let Eric Musselman coach the team. I mean, if the guy running it
boy,
keeps
kind
running
of bad
it.
Bad commentary, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if Eric Musselman was a pretty doggone good NBA coach with some bad franchises. If he would turn it over, I mean, Eric Musselman saved Herb Sendek's job last year. I think if Johnny Jones turned that team over to Eric Musselman and just kind of got out of the way, when Wade Houston brought Al Brown in, Tony. I mean, I think if Jones would just get out of the way and let Musselman do the heavy lifting and just be the guy who does the TV show on Saturday and shakes everybody's hand as famed LSU alum Johnny Jones, I think LSU is set up to be really good this year and really good next year.
Do you think that Tennessee's shameful treatment of Gonzo has caused them to lose 5 out of 6? Is that a carryover? A carryover from the way he was treated when he was run out of here on a rail?
I think that's probably a question for Seth Davis.
He says it's probably tweaked this loss, these 5 out of 6 losses. It's the racist attitude of those crackers in Tennessee are what's causing this, don't you think?
Appreciate you, brother.
You break the news. We got a BBF and a Quinn Buckner. It's a roller coaster, baby, just like the Ohio players. It'd be a roller coaster. Let's ride it. Some days will be good. It's going to be, when it's bad, it's going to be awful. Let's hang on. This guy's doing a great job. Thank you, folks.
Roller coaster of love. Say what?
I agree completely with what he said. My question is, Tony, has our man Big Gulp made it out of the shower yet?
Oh, he's been tweeting like a damn madman. My Twitter timeline, it looks like the grand finale at your local fireworks display. I mean, that son of a gun comes out. I bet you he's had to replace 4 or 5 phones, because I know he's getting those phones wet. Because he's got to be sitting there with that thing right by his towel. And that's a lot of toweling he's got to do. And he's sitting there, retweet. And you get like 75 of them, right? And these goofball sheep that listen to me now, half of you that are listening to us, he is these goofball sheep tweet him stuff because they know he's going to retweet him. They're just going for cheap tweets.
it's Mick Foley. It's essentially Mick Foley announcing the name of whatever city they're in that night.
Yes. Let's go back to the phones. This is really funny stuff. 865-200-5402. The rat is down 15 with 3:23 to go.
The rat is not very happy right now.
I will go as long as the rat goes. The rat's fixing to come down with another bad back here momentarily. Was that Bill Guthridge that year? No, it wasn't Guthridge. Who was the guy the rat turned it over to? The poor guy
got... Pete Godette.
Godette. And they just mistreated and lamb-blasted that guy. Whatever happened to Pete Godette?
He was an assistant at Vanderbilt for a while, and I'm certain he's out of coaching.
And that was shameful what the rat did to him. The way the rat let him take the fall. Let's go to the phones.
Well, the rat looked out there one night and realized Cherokee Parks was his best player, and I'm sure his back did start hurting. Mine would. If I was used to coaching Christian Laettner and Grand Hill and Bobby Hurley and Danny Ferry and guys like that, and I looked out there and suddenly realized that I'd managed to recruit myself into a place where my best player was Cherokee Parks, I'd probably get sick too.
The show is officially made at Hatfield. Coach Phelps just tweeted me a second ago and said, at Tony Basilio, the big gulp is out of the shower.
Yeah. See, hey, the global reach of the Tony Basilio radio platform, Tony.